everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me, as always, is Chris Elogi. Say hi, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so as you probably noticed, we weren't on last week. That's because it was Thanksgiving, and we were all still recovering. I wasn't so much recovering from, you know, the food coma so much as having to deal with, you know, the small number of family I had to deal with this year, especially after this election. And when I'm in a family of mostly Trump supporters. Yeah. It's only so much that, you know, stuffing and cranberry sauce can cure. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. This episode is going to be for December 4th, 2020. We are almost at the end of the year. I say we're almost at the end of the year. We still got, obviously, Christmas hasn't come yet, so we still got a little over close to 4 weeks left.
3 weeks.
Huh?
3 weeks? New Year's is 4 weeks from now.
Yeah. That's Christmas. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. I don't do math good, but yeah. It's that time of the year. Everything's cooled off. Obviously, because of the human malware, we are all having to sort of hunker down this holiday season. You know, most of us are pretty much doing our Christmas shopping online anyway. But yeah. As for me, you know, we're starting to do some of that Christmas. Well, I'll talk about it when we get to it. But anyway, for this week, what we're going to have for you, obviously, we got some more election and Trump-related news, including a presidential pardon that happened this week. We also, it looks like parts of the administration are starting to turn on other parts of the administration, which is just wonderful. Watching them just devour each other is so much fun. Watching the whole sort of MAGA sphere slowly implode and turn on itself in this sort of delayed reaction is just amazing. Like, I mean, we all knew that when your entire foundation is built on lies, it can't help but eventually collapse on itself. And usually in the worst way possible. And we're now watching that happen right now. And after 4 goddamn years of this shit, it is just, it's so sweet. It is so very, very sweet to see. Obviously, we've also got some heroes of the week. Unfortunately, we will have more COVID news to talk about. We do have some good news on the vaccine front, but unfortunately, everybody, Dr. Fauci and everybody warned us that this was going to be a dark winter, and that is exactly what is happening right now. The numbers have spiked, and you'll see. You'll see what I mean. And we do have a couple of entertainment news. Mostly what Warner Brothers has decided they're going to do for their 2021 film slate. Mostly like what they're going to do as far as like theatrical and streaming releases go. You'll see what we mean. Before we get to all that shit, Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Dealing with our first major storm of the winter.
Snowstorm?
Yeah. It was Monday night. It was raining mostly all day Monday, and then obviously got cold, turned into snow overnight, dropped in my neck of Ohio, maybe about 4 or 5 inches, with a good bit more, like an inch or so, over the course of Tuesday. A pretty good amount. Luckily, I didn't have to drive out in it like early in the day and deal with all that shit, but still not a great time.
Yeah.
Just now, it's starting to melt. Today was in the 40s, upper 40s, so get a little bit of reprieve from that for the time being, but yeah, having to deal with all that. But yeah, it's been watching some stuff. Got back into The Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm.
As things have been going on with that, I've finished up the first season and just finished up all the current episodes. Because the internet can't help but just try and spoil everything for you.
Of course.
Because you can't just enjoy things at your own pace. Mm-hmm. So I've been watching. I'm not going to spoil anything, but they're definitely taking some swings on some things and ways to tie this into the greater Star Wars mythos.
Yeah.
And the things you might know from the movies and the shows and all that kind of stuff. Some ways that I saw coming, and other ways that I did not. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, one of the most interesting things they have in this is the actor that plays Gus Fring in Breaking Bad is in this,
mm-hmm.
playing like the main leader of the what's left of the Empire here, and he does a really good job at that, as has been like his main thing in a lot of his big roles, like Gus Fring, and I assume what he's doing in Far Cry 6. Who knows? We haven't really seen too much of that. But yeah, he does a really good job in that. So yeah, that's been fun to get into. I've been told that it ties into the Clone Wars show a good bit, so I am tempted to make that the next thing I'm going to watch on Disney Plus. But the other thing I've been watching a good bit of is Bob's Burgers. That's on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the second season, like episode 6 or 7, something like that.
Yeah.
Which is where I'm at is uncharted territory for me. I've seen the full first season
mm-hmm.
before, so that wasn't too much of a surprise. So second season where they're really going for it in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first episode involves a taffy factory that's getting blown up or demolished. And the kids find out about some sort of potential treasure that's hidden under there. And they, the kids decide to go do that, bringing along some of the other kids that they know. Jimmy Jr. and the other two Pesto kids.
Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't know those two kids, the twins, are voiced by... what's her name? The female comedian that's... I forget what her name is, but... her and her sister voice it.
Mm-hmm.
Voice both characters.
Yeah.
And then they have the ending theme mm-hmm. that is performed by Cyndi Lauper, which is a song they call Taffy Butt.
Yep.
So it's Cyndi Lauper singing a song called Taffy Butt.
Yeah. As far as like,
Sarah Silverman syndicated- that's it.
Yeah, as far as like syndicated television shows go, Bob's Burgers has probably one of the best soundtracks of all of them.
Yeah, they seem to have a good pull to get some well-known artists to do some cool stuff for them.
Yeah, and they also are really good at like picking out like the sort of obscure indie rock stuff too. It's
yeah. The really episode neat. I just watched was where they get an arcade machine.
Oh yeah, the Burger one Boss. With like the yeah Burger Boss. That's basically like the it's kind of like a side scrolling Donkey Kong esque thing where he plays a chef with a rolling pin. Yeah,
yeah. Where he and gets I forget what he gets. He gets some sort of hand injury.
Yeah,
and convinces he gets hooked on painkillers.
Yeah,
and there where they portray it as him getting high.
Yeah.
To a wild degree.
Mm-hmm.
Where he starts getting in fights with kids thinking they're characters from the game.
Yeah. Doesn't he also like hire that little Indian kid to try and play for him so he can beat that dude's score? If I'm remembering that.
There's like a black kid that's at the arcade.
Right. And
he's like, enlists to help him.
That's right.
James Fair is supposedly taking care of his bully problem.
Yeah. Because what happens is, you know, Jimmy Pesto, you know, the Bob's eternal enemy, basically, walks into the burger place, and he's like, "Oh, you got Burger Boss. I'm awesome at this." And then he manages to basically destroy Bob's high score, and then puts Bob Sucks on the on the score
list. Just, you know, that just doesn't really base itself in any kind of reality, especially with far the three kids.
It's far better than it has any right to be.
Yeah, it's the kids really add a lot to it. So yeah, that's been the kind of the stuff I've been watching. As for games, I've been playing some stuff on my PS5. Maneater, the sort of shark RPG that Tripwire Interactive made. That has a PS5 upgrade to it. The upgrade stuff is all right. It doesn't really use the controller all that much. It probably has the worst use of the activity cards I've seen, because I have taken use the one that's usually all of them have something that's like, "Oh, resume from where you were at." And this one just loads it up through the, you know, the intro logos, all that, and pops you at the main menu. It's like, I could have done that with less button presses. Yeah. I just hit play. Yeah. Got the exact same effect. Maybe it goes through them a little bit quicker, but it's not like others where I've just hit it and it's like, all right, it just automatically loads the latest save that you have. I was like, oh, that saves me a lot of time. This one just okay. Kind of a weak thing. I hope they can maybe fix it or something in updates. But the game itself is pretty fun. The story stuff they've done is very much kind of a documentary kind of thing, especially the intro thing where you're playing a shark that is like getting hunted by this like reality show fisherman dude. You eventually get caught by him. Like in one last ditch, the shark bites his arm off.
Yeah.
Or like his forearm. And then like it births a baby shark that gets thrown out into the sea. So you play as the baby. That's how you do all your leveling and all that. Right now I'm in the teen phase, the second phase. Some of the quests are pretty easy. Someone's like, "Oh, go here and eat, you know, 10 of these catfish," kind of thing. Others are just, "Hey, there's collectibles in the water that you can go find." Some of them have been, like, kill these big enemies. Some of them have been, like, I forget if they're sturgeons or not, but these big fish, as well, two of them are for alligators that don't fuck around.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's just because I'm not big enough yet or if it's I just have to level up some more, because I'm like level 4 or 5 and the lower shark is like 8. It's like I can do some damage to it, but not enough without me having to run off and eat some fish to get health back, because they can grab you and then like start spinning around, make it harder for you to get out of its grip, that kind of thing. But yeah, along the way you get like narration from like a reality show kind of guy. It's like talking about the, you know, habits of sharks or fish or whatever is going on. You're in like the, I think I'm in like Louisiana or something like that, the bayou kind of rivers, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's been pretty fun so far. I also continue to play Rocket League. The new season starts here on the 9th, so I'm trying to finish up all the quests I can. Which is harder for some than others, because they released the last batch of season challenges a couple weeks ago, and there were some pretty doozies for giving you like 2 or 3 weeks to finish them. One was like get 10 MVPs in the extra mode playlist. It's like the basketball, hockey, the one with the power-ups and drop shots, which is a lot harder to get 10 of those, especially when you're trying to play a bunch of that just for those missions. More challenging than in the regular stuff because that's at least pure skill and some luck, but the extra mode stuff can be more luck than anything else because all those games are pretty different than the others, so just luck of the draw whether you get into a match where you set yourself up well for getting points, and whereas extra mode is kind of just working out a lot of things. But it's still been fun. Looking forward to seeing how the next season goes. Probably talk more about that on Day Zero update, but also been playing more Worms Rumble, which is on PlayStation Plus. And that game is actually pretty fun. It's a multiplayer game, not the traditional Worms, like turn-based style. It is more of just an active side-scrolling shooter multiplayer game. But with a lot of the arsenal that the Worms games have had, I have like a sheep gun I've used a few times. Different to typical shooters, you end up... every time you spawn with a different weapon. So it picks at random, so you're not necessarily just starting with like a pistol or something basic. Sometimes you get a assault rifle or a shotgun. Like it's maybe just between those three. You have to find the others in crates or from other people dying. So like I've had more success with either the assault rifle or the rocket launcher. So those can do a lot of damage pretty quickly. But you can get one that is like a super powered rocket launcher that you have to like hold down the trigger for a few seconds and it launches like a barrage of missiles out, which can do a lot of damage, but also be hard to aim where you might want them. That kind of thing. Along the way you're kind of doing daily quests. Usually ones I've seen is like get a kill streak of 3, do X amount of damage, overall between matches and get X amount with like a grenade or some other type of weapon. Which aren't too bad. And they unlock some random item in your like cosmetics stuff, all that kind of stuff. Which is nice. But there's not really too much to the unlocks. It's a lot of just cosmetic stuff. So you can get different kinds of stuff for your worm or skins for your weapons. That kind of stuff. So nothing really too complicated there. I assume as time goes on, they'll add new types of cosmetics, all that kind of stuff. For now, it's a pretty fun little game to hop into, though I really need to start using the activity card stuff some more because it has cards just for like launching deathmatch or this mode or that mode, that kind of stuff, and make it a lot easier just to get into matches. But it's a 32 player deathmatch. Works out pretty well. I've had some success, but not a ton. I usually end up in like the 10 to 15 range on that. It's not too bad, but not particularly great. I usually have like a good run and then just have a lot of bad luck and fall down. So that's been kind of it for the most part. How about you, Brandon?
As for me, my gaming for right now is I finished Trails of Cold Steel 4. And that game ends just absolutely perfectly. Like I I mentioned last time on pretty sure it was on Day Zero that there are actually two endings for Cold Steel 4. There is the default ending and there is the secret ending, which is actually the canonical true ending. And what that entails is you're having to basically you have to finish the game first, and then you're then prompted whether or not you want to quote walk into the unknown or fate of the unknown, something like that. And what happens is that there's a thing where you go back outside of the fortress where, the last part of the game takes place in, and you end up finding this sort of swirly, smoky red portal And what that ends up doing is essentially going back and redoing a part of the past timeline. Like, it's some weird thing, and I actually would not be surprised if it ends up hinting to something that's probably going to happen in the next story arc. But basically, it ends up putting a new sort of nugget into the events of the game up to that point that ends up essentially changing the options that you have at the final battle. And once you do that, after you've beat what was originally the last boss, you then fight the actual last boss, which is this gigantic demon with like two other demons on its shoulder, and you have to like break up all of your team into like three teams, and there's the one in the center that's in charge of fighting the regular main boss, but the thing is, the two demons on its shoulder will actually enact shields that will protect it from like physical and spell and magic attacks. So you end up having to use the other two teams to kill the other two demons so you can actually fight the regular demon. It's fucking epic. It is probably the best battle in the entire game, with just the sense of scale. So Cold Steel, that is officially the end of the Cold Steel series. The Trail of Beginning, I believe, which is the next one, that one is already out. And obviously we're going to have to wait until that one gets translated. But that one actually ends up going into the Republic, which is, you know, they've been building up bits and pieces of like what's happening in the Republic at this point in the story. And basically the Republic may be heading into a serious ethnic tensions within it. So we'll see where that goes. So in the meantime, I started playing Killzone Shadowfall, which for those who don't know, that was a launch title for the PS4 in the Killzone series by, I believe it's Guerrilla Games, people who also did, well, you guys know what else they also did other than Killzone up to this point. It's good. It's a good, you know, it's not mind-blowing amazing, but it's good for what it is. But other than Killzone, I've also been playing AI Dungeon. For those of you who don't remember, AI Dungeon is basically like a free-to-play, like text adventure type thing you can do that is controlled basically by an artificial intelligence. It's actually really good, and it can actually – basically you can play like any kind of scenario you want. Fantasy, sci-fi, space opera, cyberpunk, zombies, apocalypse, horror, mystery stories, pretty much anything. AI, just to warn you ahead of time, if you do try, the AI can occasionally, because again, it's artificial intelligence, so it's still not completely perfect. It will on occasion like go off into like weird tangents on the side, or just sort of take the story like it out in a way into a direction that'll like hurt the immersion factor. But that's okay. The game lets you use the tools so that you can like go back and like delete the response and try again, see if you get something that's a bit better, or you can actually go back and just edit, you know, what the AI says and fit it more to the type of story you're trying to play. Otherwise, I mean, other than that, it's incredibly addictive. It really is. Like, you just try it and you see the incredible possibilities that this game does, and it will legitimately amaze you. But other than that, I've also been reading, as usual, my usual reading. I got a copy of Becky Chambers' A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, which is a book that Phil had been lauding everywhere, and I am an idiot for having waited up until now to finally read it, because he's right. It's definitely a lot of fun. And other than that, I've just been kind of dealing with like Christmas shit. You know, it's that time of the year, it's the holidays, it's cooling off, and that means we gotta start get all the decorations out of the attic, including the tree, And of course, this is, our dog Brody's only his second Christmas, and he wasn't exactly sure how to deal with the decorations the first time around, and he doesn't exactly he isn't exactly the type of dog to have like the type of long-term memory for shit like that. So we'll see how he acts, but yeah, I know you're looking at me. I am talking about you. But anyway, so moving on from there, I guess it's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, which is Brandon's random factoid. Yay! So, Chris, you know what's coming out next week, right?
What is that?
Cyberpunk 2077. Oh, after six long goddamn years, it's finally within our grasp. It's real. It's actually physical. People have held it in their hands. People have played demos of it. They've played previews of it, and they loved it. And, this isn't like, just one last joke before CD Projekt Red goes, psych, and just snatches it away and says, now we're actually going to release it next year. No, it's real. It's coming out on the 10th. I finished my pre-order. It's coming, and we'll probably be talking more about it on Day Zero as well, but I thought this week, since that momentous occasion is happening, we'd talk very briefly about the genre of cyberpunk, what it is, where it actually comes from, because it has a fairly storied history. It may be one of the more recent sort of main subgenres in the science fiction world, but it's already built up a nice little canon of its own. So, Chris, when I asked you what you thought of when you heard the word cyberpunk, you basically said Blade Runner, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were thinking like, sort of dreary, rainy future world, big tall skyscrapers covered in neon lights.
Flying cars,
corporations run the world.
Yeah,
a lot of people are like having like cybernetic implants and shit, stuff like that. Yeah,
a hint of racism.
Yeah. It was the early 80s, and basically everybody
a lot of fear about Japan taking over.
Yeah, everybody in the 80s thought that Japan was going to overtake the U.S. economically
because the Walkman was that good.
Yeah. So cyberpunk, obviously, as we know it, more or less came into existence around 1980. But before then, there'd already been a lot of writers that had written stuff that, even if it wasn't cyberpunk per se, it had elements of cyberpunk or what would become cyberpunk. Writers like Harlan Ellison, for example, who famously wrote I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, or J.G. Ballard, who wrote books like Crash, and there's like Roger Zelazny, who wrote Damnation Alley. But probably the writer, like pre-cyberpunk writer most people point to when they talk about the birth, sort of like grandfather of cyberpunk, that's usually Philip K. Dick. Now, these days, Philip K. Dick is considered part of the American literary canon. His work has gone outside of the science fiction ghetto and has become sort of a mainstream part of literature. And not for no reason. The dude was a genuinely amazing writer. But a lot of the sort of things that we consider about the cyberpunk genre, the idea of like corporate rule, like privately funded warfare, government corruption and conspiracy, stuff like that. The sort of relationship between man and machine. Philip K. Dick basically sort of set all the groundwork for it. Usually most people will point to the work that's in one or more ways has probably had the most influence out of anything else. And that was his 1968 novel, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? which was the book that would become the film known as Blade Runner. And as you can probably tell from that story, it's about a guy whose job is to hunt down androids, specifically, or replicants, as they're called, who are like humans in such a way, but are so good at it that it can be difficult to sort of tell them apart from regular people. And sort of his job is to hunt them down and kill them. But there's always this sort of question in the back of their mind where it is like, is he himself also a replicant? And the book basically leaves it up in the air on whether or not he is or not. And that's kind of what Philip K. Dick does a lot of his books. He gives this, like, he usually leaves you with this, like, mind-numbing paradox that can just sort of circle around itself for all eternity. And then he just ends the book there. But when it comes to, like, main cyberpunk, when we think of, like, cyberpunk as it is today, there's basically three or four writers that people think of. The first that usually pops up pretty much always is, you guessed it, William Gibson, who famously published the classic book Neuromancer in 1984. Now, Chris, are you familiar with Neuromancer at all?
Other than hearing of the game thing.
All right, so basically Neuromancer sort of just built the sort of the entire, well, really not just Neuromancer, but sort of Gibson's work in general in the 80s sort of set the ground level foundation for how we see cyberpunk. Neuromancer is literally about a dude who is a hacker, basically, who surfs a virtual space that was essentially the internet, basically, with sort of like a virtual reality type thing. And he's going on a job because he's trying to hunt down an AI that has gone rogue in a world that is sort of grayed over and very sort of dilapidated and decaying and, you know, dealing with like environmental disaster and shit. He has, and his sort of quote unquote partner in crime is a woman named Molly Millions, who is a quote unquote razor girl who had her sunglass shade lens surgically implanted over her eyes, and she has like syringe needles for fingernails. And she works as a, what's sometimes called a meat girl, which is basically prostitution with an unconscious body. And they end up riding through what a fanciful version of a virtual reality internet on digital green sharks. And it's really fucking bizarre and weird. But basically, you know, when it came out, it was a mind-blowing hit. And it won the Hugo, the Nebula, and the Philip K. Dick Award all in the same year. So it basically won the Triple Crown. He also published a short story anthology called Burning Chrome. Now, if you know anything from that particular book, you may know about the first story in that particular collection, which also happened to be one of the first stories he ever published. You may know it because it spawned a film adaptation of the same name, called Johnny Mnemonic, which, ironically, also starred Keanu Reeves, who is also in
Cyberpunk.
Exactly. But that book in particular is unique because it also includes some collaboration stories he did with basically the two other dudes who are considered to be the ground floor of the cyberpunk genre. One is a guy named John Shirley. Shirley is neat. If you're a guy who is into like video game tie-in books, especially like Borderlands or BioShock, then you might be familiar with John Shirley. He actually wrote a couple of tie-ins for. He's written tie-ins for Borderlands, Watch Dogs, Halo, and let's see. I believe he also did. Yeah, he did BioShock as well. The sort of like a prequel story to Before the Game called Border Shock, called called BioShock Rapture. Yeah. But before he did all that, he was one of the first writers who started the whole, who helped start it, the what we now call cyberpunk, with writers with books like Transmaniacon, which is about a dude who discovers a sort of dimension traveling device that lets him travel through the multiverse to very gruesome ends. Also, the thing is loaded with to Blue Oyster Cult references. He also wrote a book called City Come a Walkin', which is about a dude in a sort of cyberpunk California who encounters a sort of amoral superhero type dude who's basically like the embodiment of the state of California if it was a person. It'll make sense if you actually read the book. He also wrote some pulp stuff for like the Traveler series, which is a post-apocalyptic sci-fi men's adventure series he did under the name DB Drum. He also wrote the Specialist sort of men adventure stories about a mercenary under the name John Cutter. But probably his like main claim to fame was the foundation of the cyberpunk genre was a trilogy he wrote called the Eclipse Trilogy, also known as A Song Called Youth, which is essentially about the second rise of fascism and how it's essentially World War III. And, you know, by the time the fascist regime sort of established itself in the U.S., there's already like a third world war happening in other parts of the world, and there's like a various resistance cells and partisan cells that have popped up. Part of the reason this series kind of made a bit sort of a comeback in the last few years is because it seemed to prefigure the sort of resurrection of like national populist quasi-fascist authoritarianism in the 21st century. And if you ever get a chance, read it. It's weirdly, like, prescient in ways you wouldn't expect. Also, as an aside, John Shirley is also a musician. He wrote a bunch of songs for Blue Oyster Cult's most recent albums. He also has his own band called the Screaming Geezers that he's the lead singer for. They play in Portland sometimes. Anyway, John Shirley, in that collection, he co-wrote a story called The Belonging Kind with William Gibson. There's another story in there, though, that was co-written with a guy who's the other sort of like godfather of the genre, and that's a guy named Bruce Sterling. Now, Bruce Sterling is a guy who, even though his science fiction doesn't get as much attention as it used to, he kind of made a name for himself in the 90s. After the concepts of hackers and computer crime started to become like major concepts, like, you know, they were well known in the mainstream. He is the guy who, amongst other things, he edited an anthology which is called Mirror Shades that came out in 1986, which is generally considered to be sort of the canonical anthology that sort of established what we consider the modern cyberpunk canon, with writers like Rudy Rucker, Pat Cadigan, Mark Laidlaw, Greg Bear, and of course you had, you know, Gibson and Shirley are also in there as well. And that book, if you ever get a chance, get your hands on it. It's absolutely worth reading. Anyway, he also is famous for writing a book in 1992 called The Hacker Crackdown, Law and Disorder on the Electronic Frontier. Basically, it helps to sort of essentially chronicle the sort of watershed events that happened in the hacker subculture in the early 90s. Especially the foundation of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the sort of rise of infamous hackers that became infamous because even though they were pretty good hackers, because of the legend they built up around themselves, they were imprisoned in draconian conditions because the police were afraid that if they could whistle in a pay phone, they could set off NORAD, you know, shit like that. But his claim to fame as far as like the cyberpunk fiction is concerned include books such as, books like Islands in the Net, which is it's basically what it sounds like. It's about a woman who's a professional internet hacker, and it's sort of like a crime story. What's known as the book called Schematrix, which is a space opera book that is part of a universe called the Shaper Maker universe, basically about like a sort of human, sort of post-human schism that happens between humans who are on the ideas of genetic engineering and the others who are more about mechanical and cybernetic implementation, stuff like that. But you'll notice all of these writers sort of had certain themes that were in common. A lot of them were essentially reaction to the kind of overly optimistic science fiction that came out of the pulp era, and especially against the sort of like Star Wars and stuff like that, which was overly fantasy and optimistic. Their essential thesis was that whereas like Golden Age sci-fi, that technology would make better people. Their thesis was that technology will not make people better, and that even though in their worlds, you know, technology has, you know, evolved significantly, people are still dealing with all the same problems of their era, you know, poverty, corruption, police brutality, crime, environmental and ecological disasters, stuff like that. They essentially helped give a really much needed kick to the ass that the science fiction genre really needed. And the legacy is that today we not only have amazing movies like Blade Runner, but we've also got games like Cyberpunk 2077 coming out Friday, December 10th. And that's how I bring this all full circle and say that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. Did you see what I did there? Did you see how I wrapped it all up into a nice little bow?
Oh, yeah.
Well, don't sound so impressed, Greg. I'm just kidding. All right. So with that out of the way, it is now time for the show proper. And as always, we have to start off with the assholes of the week. And, of course, our biggest asshole of the week, as he has been basically for the last 3 weeks, because we're now in, what is it, fourth or fifth week after the election now. And Trump still will not acknowledge that Biden won. And but part of me thinks secretly that Trump recognizes that his time is getting short because he's been talking about some pardons, and he just did a pardon this week. He gave a presidential pardon to Michael Flynn.
Yep. Who has pled guilty twice, I think.
Mm-hmm.
To lying to the FBI, then reversed himself before the Justice Department stepped in to dismiss his case.
Also, didn't he fail to register as a foreign agent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was initially why he was dismissed from the National Security Council.
Mm-hmm. And,
which I don't think either of those cases went. I think they both got, all of his cases gotten dismissed.
Yeah.
I think. So
possibly,
what is he getting pardoned for?
I think it's like what they call a preemptive pardon.
Yeah.
Which, for the record, that's something else Trump has been talking about: getting preemptive pardons for his kids, for Secretary Barr, and for Jared Kushner. And, of course, now that Michael Flynn is essentially pardoned, he's also one of those dudes who's gotten into that small number that's calling for a military coup d'etat, which, by the way, that's not going to happen.
No.
It won't. The military hates Trump's guts more than anybody else right now.
And they're not going to circle around somebody that they know is on the way out.
Yeah. So, yeah. Other than that, again, Attorney General Barr, who, you know, one of those guys that he might have a preemptive pardon for, he appointed a special prosecutor to investigate the origins of the Trump-Russia probe. Yeah, so basically they're trying to track down whoever it is behind that particular bit of whistleblowing and I guess try to silence them?
Yeah, I don't know. But also adding extra protections onto him so he can't be easily fired. They appointed U.S. Attorney John Durham, special counsel in October under the same federal regulations that governed special counsel Robert Mueller in the original Russia probe. Said Durham's investigation has been narrowing to focus more on the conduct of FBI agents who worked on the Russia investigation, known by the code name of Crossfire Hurricane.
Yeah.
Other regulations, special counsel can be fired only by the Attorney General, and for specific reasons such as misconduct, dereliction of duty, or conflict of interest, Attorney General must document such reasons in writing. So yeah, I don't really know like what he's supposed to do. Let's see. Barr says Durham is authorized, quote, to investigate whether any federal official, employee, or any person or entity violated the law in connection with the intelligence, counterintelligence, or law enforcement activities directed at the 2016 presidential campaigns and associated with the campaigns or the Trump administration.
Yeah. That totally doesn't sound ominous.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Maybe wait to appoint this guy to say, like, no corruption or any of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind, just so everybody knows, we're now, let's see, we basically have until the January 21st that we have to deal with this, so yeah, we've only got, like, I'm going to say about 6 or 7 more weeks of this shit to have to deal with.
Yeah.
Before these people are all out on their asses. But speaking of assholes, Mo Brooks, who is in the House of Representatives for the state of Alabama, is planning to challenge the Electoral College votes when Congress certifies the victory on January 6th.
Yeah, so this whole weird thing with Mo Brooks, who has been telling colleagues and allies that he plans to challenge the Electoral College votes when Congress officially certifies Joe Biden's victory on January 6th. As long as the Senate Republican joins him in the long shot effort, apparently confirmed his plans in a phone interview, and is still considering objecting to the vote counting process, even if no one joins him. They acknowledge that would be more of a symbolic protest. Also echoing, you know, Trump's claims of voter fraud and all that stuff. Saying, in my judgment, if only lawful votes by eligible American citizens were cast, Donald Trump won the Electoral College by a significant margin, which is not true. And Congress
again, they keep using that phrase, but I don't think it means what they think it means.
Yeah.
Or, on the other hand, they're just trying to say that illegal votes for them is anyone who isn't white.
Yeah, especially in predominantly black cities. This election was stolen by the socialists engaging in extraordinary voter fraud and election theft measures.
Again, not what that word means.
Yeah. You would think at some point with the way the media is fine with trying to call Democrats socialists, they don't go the other way, calling Republicans fascists. Like, ask them to their face, are they a fascist?
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny that.
I've always got to ask, you know, Kamala Harris or Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or whatever if they're socialists.
Yeah.
Which, no.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, Sanders and AOC both identify as
Democratic socialists.
Yeah, which is basically a fancy word for social democrat here in the U.S. Actual democratic socialism does exist, but it's not social democracy.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, social democracy would definitely be a step up from what we have right now, but that's a whole other thing we'll get into some other time. But
Republicans have done well to try to dirty the word to mean they're communists.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't have to until fairly recently when Bernie Sanders basically broke that taboo once and for all.
Yeah.
And what they're finding is that it's not really working as well as they think it would.
Yeah.
Because here's a dirty little secret. When you try to say something inane as socialized medicine or, you know, paid paternity leave or something is socialism, people start to wonder what socialism is. And you just end up creating more socialists.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, yeah, fuck this guy. All right. And, but fortunately, it's not all bad because we've also got our heroes of the week. And one of our heroes of the week is Elliot Page, formerly Ellen Page, the star of Umbrella Academy and Juno, who revealed that he is transgender this week.
Yeah, best not to dead name him.
Yeah, I just tried to pick it up because, like, Elliot Page, what do you mean? It's like they were formerly known as this is them now.
Yeah.
Not everybody
Juno,
got the memo.
Yeah, the Umbrella Academy, was it Beyond Two Souls?
Mm-hmm.
Basically put a big post up on their social media stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, hi friends, I want to share with you that I am trans. My pronouns are he, they.
Yep.
My name is Elliot. I feel lucky to be writing this, to be here, to have arrived at this place in my life. I feel overwhelming gratitude for the incredible people who have supported me along this journey. Can't begin to express how remarkable it feels to finally love who I am enough to pursue my authentic self. I've been endlessly inspired by so many in the trans community. Thank you for your courage, your generosity, and ceaselessly working to make this world a more inclusive and compassionate place. I will offer whatever support I can and continue to strive for more loving and equal society. I love that I am trans, and I love that I am queer. The more I hold myself close and fully embrace who I am, the more I dream, and the more my heart grows, the more I thrive. All the trans people deal with harassment, self-loathing, abuse, and the threat of violence every day. I see you, I love you, and will do everything I can to change this world for the better. And it uses both he/him and they/them pronouns.
Yeah.
Describes himself as transgender and non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
His gender identity is neither man nor woman.
Mm.
And... yeah, I believe Netflix has said that they are going to go back and change the credits on Umbrella Academy and all the other stuff they have to make it line up correctly, which is a good move.
Yeah.
And yeah, just a cool thing that he got to make this announcement.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Absolutely awesome.
I think we've known that he has been LGBT for a while, just not...
oh, yeah.
Necessarily particularly what... to the extent that was.
Yeah, I mean, they came out a couple years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Good for Elliot.
Yep.
And moving on from there. This week, the country of Scotland became the first nation in the world to make women's sanitary products 100% free.
Yep.
So that means... tampons, maxi pads.
All that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Stuff that is basically a necessity for a woman.
Yeah. Yeah. The bill, the period products bill, passed unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
Requires local authorities to ensure that period products are generally obtainable free of charge. Schools and colleges must ensure period products are freely available to students, and designated public places must also make the products available.
Mm-hmm.
They estimate the measure will cost £24 million a year, or about $32 million.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a good move because there is an issue of people that just can't afford that stuff.
Yeah,
having to try to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And make everything else meet ends meet for that stuff.
Pretty much. So yeah, that's good stuff. Good stuff. Hopefully we can one day have something like that over here in the U.S.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of other bullshit to get through before we can get to that point.
Yeah, well, you know, dare to struggle, dare to win.
Yeah.
A woman by the name of Sarah Fuller made history this week when she became the first woman to play in a Power 5 college football game.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Power 5 is the big five conferences in the main FBS division of football. That'd be the Big Ten, ACC, the Southeastern Conference, the Big 12, and the Pac-12. She played for Vanderbilt, particularly because they had their kicker, I think, who had COVID and was out for the game, and she is one of their soccer stars. Came on to play. Unfortunately, the team was shut out 41-0, so she only got to do one kickoff. Didn't get any chances for a field goal or point after touchdown, but still made history as the first woman in a Power 5 conference game. Not the first woman to kick in an FBS game is the third one. There were some in smaller conferences.
Yeah.
One for New Mexico and one for Kent State here in Ohio. Those two women got to make extra points, I think it says here.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So, yeah.
I think she's potentially going to play this week as well, this weekend.
Yeah.
So she might get a chance to actually score some points.
So, very slowly, ever so slowly, the wall of segregated sports is slowly coming down.
Yeah.
This week, Time Magazine has named their first ever Kid of the Year. And their Kid of the Year is the young, let's see, her name is Gintanyali Rao, 15 years old, scientist and inventor.
Yeah, I think it's Gintanyali.
Yeah, Gintanyali Rao. Yeah, I admit I
have an extra N in there, but
trouble with
it's an Indian American name, so it's a little bit unusual for us to read and say. But yeah, she works on let's see, she's worked on various types of technology to tackle issues ranging from contaminated drinking water to opioid addiction and cyberbullying. And her mission is to create a global community of young innovators to solve problems the world over. There's a nice little interview here between her and Angelina Jolie.
Yep.
Sort of talk to her about all this stuff.
Which is awesome. So, yeah, go and read that interview. It's very enlightening.
Yeah.
And basically showing that, no, yeah, the kids are going to be all right. Okay, moving on from there, we have this, and this one is especially a big one. This week, the House of Representatives approved a bill that will federally decriminalize marijuana.
Yep. I think it also facilitates canceling low-level.
It had bipartisan support, too, didn't it?
Not really. It was five Republicans and a lone independent member joined Democrats to pass the bill. Six Dems voted no. So
I have a feeling so those some of those are.
Yeah, so it also facilitates canceling low-level federal convictions and arrests related to marijuana, like non-violent offenses. But yeah, it's not expected to get to the Senate and pass Mitch McConnell. Unless we get two big successes in Georgia to push Mitch McConnell finally out of power. So good things can actually happen.
Yeah.
Because there's a few hundred bills that Pelosi has been getting passed in the House that have been sitting waiting for them to be considered in the Senate. Longer than just a general no from Mitch.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something that's going to happen sooner or later because states are
at this point,
slowly taking
pretty much all
on the,
yeah, pretty much
on
the, all but go ahead.
Because the states are already taking on the the whole thing of legalizing marijuana slowly, surely. And
yeah,
that's just going to become, creates the weird issue that it's legal in some of these states fully, but federally it's not. And that creates weird issues.
Yeah, pretty much all but three states in the union have liberalized their marijuana regulations to one extent or another over the last 20 years. So, yeah this would sort of help kickstart that for good. That's our Heroes of the Week, and we're going to move on to the proper show proper. And as always, before we do anything else, we have to open up the garage and wheel out the COVID-19 dump truck because we got a nice fresh load for you. And starting off here with the numbers, worldwide, there are now 65.8 million cases that have been diagnosed, with 1.5 million deaths resulting from it. In the United States alone, we have jumped up to 14.3 million cases nationwide with 278,600 deaths.
Yeah. Yeah, things are just going up exponentially at this point.
Yeah, we were all warned that this was going to happen because we knew that once, you know, the fall and winter came around and the temperatures dropped, and, you know, the holidays rolled around, that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And just like they said, it's happened. It has jumped up.
Yeah, we added like 4 million cases just in November alone.
Yep.
And we're getting over 200,000 a day. At this pace, at this point, just for cases, and deaths is getting to the point where it's getting to about 3,000 a day, which is a 9/11 every day.
Yep.
Which you would think would wake up some people.
You would think.
Yeah, there was a good story on The Cut that was about a bunch of assholes that were still traveling during lockdown. To the point of even getting, I think they were in Mexico in the one point of the story, and a number of them started getting sick. Even to the point of they were getting ready to go home and said, like, yeah, I'm not going to check the mark on this sheet to say I've been exposed to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, here it says, I'm like, we need to get the fuck out of here, she says. But obviously on the form at the airport, I'm not going to say, yep, I was exposed to COVID, and now I'm going to quarantine for 2 weeks in Mexico. Like, sorry, I'm selfish that way. Like, yeah, you are.
Yes, you are. And there was that group of young Republicans who ended up having a secret gala in New York, and now a bunch of them are going to end up getting prosecuted.
Yeah. That's why we can't have nice things. People are going to have to spend holidays alone or away from their full families.
Mm-hmm.
Because people can't just fucking stay home.
Mm-hmm.
Help mitigate the issues that this thing is causing.
Yeah.
So their freedoms.
Mm-hmm. So we got some good news on the vaccine front here. AstraZeneca, they have come out with a vaccine that has shown 70% efficacy. Again, we need to point out the difference between efficacy and effective.
Yeah.
Efficacy means that it works well in a controlled testing environment.
Yeah.
And as it shows, in a controlled testing environment, it is 70% works, but it has not been put out in a uncontrolled, non-testing population yet.
Yeah.
The good news, though, is that this uses a smaller dose regimen of around 90%. So
yeah, so they had like two different parts of this where they had sort of a full dose and for a part of their group that and then another part that had like a they had a lower dose of the vaccine followed by a full dose, and a larger group of people received two full doses, and the one that got the lower end of that sounded to be about 90% efficacy in that group, while the two large doses were 62%. So part of that was seemingly like an unintentional error in their thing, but they're going to be doing another trial and sort of testing out that lower dose regimen that potentially is more effective than their two-fold dose regimen that they were planning on. So, yeah.
Good.
Got a lot of criticism over the error on that whole thing, which, yeah, that's how that works.
Yeah.
They put out this data and they get, you know, criticized in the greater scientific community. And it seems like they'll take that to heart for the next round of trials for this stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of vaccinations, Moderna has filed for U.S. and European Union emergency use authorization for its vaccine.
Yeah.
I think we talked about theirs last time. Theirs is part of the group that's, I believe, like 90 to 95% effective.
Yeah. That one is the one that has better temperature stability. So you can store it more in like a fridge like level of temperature.
Yeah, this is basically this is the one that, you know, UPS is going to have to be storing in like dry ice and stuff.
Yeah. And yeah, so they're filing for this emergency authorization right now. But yeah, I think Pfizer's already gotten theirs approved by the UK. So they might be starting to use that stuff here pretty soon in the next few weeks.
Yep.
So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how this stuff, because right now things are starting to gel as far as the various countries' plans for how to distribute, and as well as states. I think our Governor DeWine was doing a big thing today about the planned rollouts for all this stuff.
I think it was Governor New York, Governor
Cuomo.
Yeah, Governor Cuomo, he did a press conference where he basically showed, like, what the when the vaccine arrives, like, what the packaging and everything's going to look like. So when they encounter it, they know what to do. Showing how it's going to be, you know, stored, all that stuff. And I want to remind people that when you do get this vaccine, and it does look like we're probably going to end up getting it probably sometime early next year at the earliest. That doesn't mean that you can automatically just throw away all of these, all the social distancing and stuff. You gotta, that stuff we're still probably gonna have to do for a few more months.
Yeah, because we'll talk here a little bit later. Maybe it's the next one here.
Yeah
it is. What the initial plan is.
Yeah, so the Center for Disease Control has recommended that the first people who should get vaccinated first are healthcare workers.
Yeah, healthcare workers and those working in long-term care facilities.
Yeah.
For, you know, elderly, people with mental disabilities, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Now, I'm for those who don't know, I'm a medical coder. I don't think that necessarily qualifies me for getting it first since I mostly do everything at home.
Yeah.
But, so basically,
I might qualify for the second round as in a retail establishment.
Yeah.
So might get that sometime early next year.
Yeah. And basically, what they're saying is if you work, if you're a doctor or a nurse, a surgeon, working, or you work like pharmaceuticals or something, then you need to be the first person to get this because you're the first, like, direct first line involved. You know, you're the most, the group that can be most directly affected by it at first.
Yeah. There'll be those and like the people are in those sort of long-term care facilities.
Yeah. Because if you can get them with them first, that means that it essentially like helps,
those
you
are
know,
the
that's
highest
like,
risk people.
Yeah. And that if you can start there, that is effectively like blocks off like a huge, number of possible carriers.
Yeah.
Just
that's
like that.
Been where a lot of the problems have been, like old folks homes and veterans.
Because those are areas where you can't avoid it.
Yeah.
Like, no, you have to be around other people. So, Both former presidents, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton have all volunteered to get the vaccine publicly to prove it's safe. With Barack Obama, that will especially be important because I don't know anybody outside of the U.S. doesn't know this, but there is a long, long tradition of the African-American community in the United States not really trusting the medical establishment since the black population has, over the years, been the unwanting subjects of various medical experiments.
Yeah, lots of teachings and of, you know, medical stuff that's largely relies on white men.
Yeah.
And outdated trickles down into
stuff.
Yeah, lots of people just getting weird beliefs that, so black people have powers. You know,
they have superpowers of some kind.
Don't need pain pills or,
you know, they can't get sunburns or whatever, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's like a big issue for women. There's like a lot of our expectations of like how heart attacks work is based on men.
Yeah.
It's like women's bodies work differently. It's almost like that's how it all works.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always get studied as much as men have been.
Of course. And George W., of course, he's part of the old Christian conservative crowd, and he gets it. Well, that'll sort of help that group of people maybe be more enthused to actually get it.
Yeah.
And Clinton is Clinton, so.
Part of the conspiracy.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool. Of course it is.
Yeah, so, yeah, hopefully when that vaccine rolls out next year, you know, we'll be able to do what we can to get it as fast as we can. Of course, if you've also been reading the news, you'll find out that a lot of the rich and famous are trying to game the system so they can get it sooner than everyone else.
Yeah, no, fuck them.
Yeah. Guillotine.
They're already rich. They can afford to not be around other people.
Yeah. And now for something that is infuriating. The Supreme Court of the United States this week blocked New York State from enforcing the COVID limitations on churches and worship centers.
Yeah. It was enforcing 10 to 25 person occupancy limits on religious institutions. The Supreme Court granted the request from the Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn and Ajudeth Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to pronounce that, but yeah, the state told the court there was no need to act because the restrictions, which were adopted as a way to try to prevent the spread of coronavirus, had recently been dialed back anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was voted 5-4 with Roberts joining the liberal justices and dissenting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's just this whole weird part of the coronavirus limitations where religious people, at least the extremists, somehow think they should be exempt from any of these restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Because that prevents them from praying. It's like, no, it doesn't.
No.
You literally don't have to be in church to pray.
Mm-hmm.
Do all your sermons and all that, because you can obviously do that online.
Mm.
And it's not going to really affect anything, because I would assume God would want you to be safe and not kill other people.
Yeah. The Bible basically says that a congregation can be as few as just two people. So you have no excuse.
Yeah.
But whatever. In other news, Dr. Scott Atlas has resigned from his post on the president's COVID-19 task force.
Yeah. This is more bureaucracy than anything because he was not a member of the administration. Just part of the task force, so he was a special government employee designation, mm-hmm. which gave him a 130-day window in which he could serve, and that window was technically coming to a close this week.
Yep.
So it's more just making his mark, I guess, but mm-hmm. it wasn't really a welcome part of the group because he's mm-hmm. not an infectious diseases expert of any kind. He is a... Where was it at here? I think he's like a... neurological doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Something on that part. Yeah. And supposedly he would bring discredited theories to the table.
Mm.
Oftentimes when they were discussing plans. So it seems like some of those people on the current task force are happy that he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not anything that really changes anything for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And last story we got here for the COVID stuff, incoming president, presidential-elect Joseph Biden has asked Dr. Fauci to stay on and join his COVID-19 task force.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think we all kind of expected that.
Yeah, he is the top U.S. infectious disease expert for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an infectious disease.
Yeah, so it's like perfect role for him. Right up in his wheelhouse.
And if the last dude won't listen to him, is jealous of him becoming, you know, well-known and popular, let him keep doing that.
Sure. But, so that's it for the COVID-19 dump truck this week. We're going to wheel it back into the garage, shut the door, because we're now moving on to the 2020 U.S. election cleanup. We are now, how many weeks has it been? Five, six?
4 weeks.
Since four? God, it seems longer, doesn't it?
Yeah. Time means nothing anymore.
Yeah. First and foremost, the U.S. Justice Department announced this week that they found no evidence of widespread voter fraud that could change the outcome of the election.
Yep.
Now, the key there is they said widespread voter fraud. Obviously, in a country of 300 plus million people, you're going to have like very small isolated incidents of people trying to commit voter fraud.
Yeah.
But they were not able to find a significant number that would sway the course of the election in either direction. So.
Yeah, it's – I think the runoff election you guys have, there's a wacky Florida attorney that's like trying to encourage Florida people to register for the Georgia election to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he got caught.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. There's people doing it in the dumbest way possible.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to do it, don't fucking announce it publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And encourage others. It's just going to make the bullseye a lot easier to place on you.
Yeah. That's basically like, you know, going into a bank and then giving the security guard your name and registration before you try to rob the place.
Yeah, give them your bank card first.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the Justice Department, they're also investigating a potential presidential pardon bribery scheme that has come about. We know, like we said earlier, that the president is planning preemptive pardons for members of his administration and his family, and this kind of seems to tie into that.
Yeah, this comes from some court documents that have been unsealed.
Mm-hmm.
20 pages of partially redacted documents made public by the D.C. District Court on Tuesday showed Chief Judge Beryl Howell's review in August of a request from prosecutors to access documents obtained in a search as part of a bribery for pardon investigation.
Mm-hmm.
They don't reveal a timeline of the alleged scheme or any names of people potentially involved. Said that communication between people, including at least one lawyer, were seized from an office that was raided sometime before the end of the summer. Yeah, no charges yet or anything like that.
Nah.
So, you know, more shit going on that you're like, yeah, that sounds like something they would do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely does. So, let's see, what else we got here? So, probably one of the figures from the Trump's legal team that sort of became a... just out of nowhere, a major figure, and then just as quickly became a pariah, like on a flipped on a dime, was Sidney Powell.
Yeah.
And one of the things that she was claiming is that at some point she was going to, quote, release the Kraken. And the Kraken was basically this lawsuit that supposedly implicates this wide-ranging conspiracy trying to discredit the president and commit massive voter fraud in order to give Joe Biden the presidency. And she gave it this week. She released it this week, and it is a typo-filled piece of word salad.
Yeah, the very top of the first page misspells district twice in two different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's D-I-S-T-R-I-C-C-T, and the second one is D-I-S-T-R-C-O-I-C-T. It's like, you can't even get somebody just to go over it.
Yep.
There's like extra comma here in the list of names here at the beginning. They include a tweet here of somebody just trying to proofread it. Says, started trying to proofread the Sidney Powell complaint and I didn't get very far. I wouldn't recommend filing this version in court, sod.
Yeah.
She also filed a similar one in Michigan with the same kinds of issues. Typos, again, misspelling district. It's like, you're not using any sort of spell checker here?
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, this is like, you file this in class as like a paper, they're just going to laugh you out. Like, no, this, you didn't even do anything worth grading here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, see me after class.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
By the way, those who don't know, she's not really a part of Trump's legal team anymore. She was basically fired.
Yeah.
And like a bunch of like, you know, individuals like Tucker Carlson and some of the other sort of conservative figures have essentially said, you know, you kept promising all this and we've got nothing. And it's now causing people in the MAGA world to say that those people are now part of the deep state.
Yeah, the QAnon's a big part of this whole Kraken thing. And I believe one of the people she cites as some sort of like IT person is conveniently the son of the guy who founded 8chan. So, you know, that kind of level of witnesses in there. I believe lots of people pointing out, like, yeah, there's not really anything actually claimed in this. You know, like some wild stuff here.
Oh yeah.
Things like, you know, it's 104 pages and this guy got through 4 pages and gave up.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Well, in good news, Senator Mark Kelly, who is the first Democratic senator from the state of Arizona in
Well, they have another one there.
Oh, they did have one.
They got both right now. Or
yeah.
Democrats for the first time in a few decades.
Yeah. He was sworn into the Senate this week, which now how does that change the balance of the Senate right now?
I think we are 52-48, it says.
Republican?
Yeah.
All right.
With the two Georgia guys getting in, Ossoff and Warnoff.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw one of his ads, which was about, I think he's going against Loeffler.
Yeah.
Basically was doing a video of him walking his dog and throwing a bag of dog poop in the garbage.
Yeah.
Saying that's what Kelly Loeffler's claims are.
Yeah. She has been the whole sort of thing against Warnock has been vicious down here. Yeah. TV ads, radio ads, trying to
claim that she is the party of the normal citizen.
Yeah, even though she's unelected.
That, and she has like 5 homes.
Yeah.
She has 5 large mansions, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like, it's
so
nuts.
Here's the thing. She tried to like lambast Warnock and the church that he serves in with all this quote-unquote radical socialist rhetoric where he's saying things like, you know, you cannot serve God in the military, police operate like thugs, taking stuff out of context. And then Warnock came back with probably the greatest comeback, which was, oh yeah, all this shit she's talking about, yeah, she spoke at Warnock's church. She said she was happy to be there. We got it all on tape. Warnock is sitting in the back.
yeah, it's fun. It seems like who is this, Midas, has done a video comparing the two Republicans as the Grinches of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently they've threatened suit.
Yep. Also, fun fact, a good chunk of MAGA world is now saying that nobody should bother voting in the Georgia election.
So, yeah, sure, go for that.
I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Yes, it would really make the liberals cry if you refuse to vote in this election.
Yeah, they're mad that the GOP in the state aren't backing up Trump's bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
At least to the extent that he wants.
If you sit out this next election, I may need a safe space.
Yeah.
You know, we on the left will never be able to recover.
Yeah, it's it'll be sad.
Yeah.
So much so they had to send Pence down there to calm people down.
Yeah, and apparently Trump himself is actually going to show up in Valdosta probably in the next couple weeks. But anyway, going from there, the GSA has ascertained Biden as the apparent winner and have started the transition after, you know, withholding all that fucking money.
Yeah. But now they're starting the transition, so
mm-hmm.
They're going to start getting the funds and such they need so they can actually be ready to go on day one.
Mm-hmm. And I guess... Mm-hmm. We also now know what Biden's cabinet members are going to be. We know what his economy team is going to be, his press team, cabinet members. It's pretty much, I mean, it's, let's be honest, we knew Biden, so we kind of knew what we were going to expect. It's mostly a bunch of wishy-washy center-right liberals.
Yeah. Some former members of Obama's.
The difference being is that they're all relatively sane and competent.
Yeah. There's like a good bit that are just from Obama's team.
Yeah.
Others that are just common sense ones.
Mm-hmm.
Which enraged Marco Rubio.
Mm-hmm.
Who said Biden's cabinet picks went to Ivy League schools, strong resumes, attend all the right conferences. We like, polite, orderly caretakers of America's decline. Just like people showed what Trump's cabinet looks like. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
Guess what? That's where a lot of politicians come from.
Yeah.
Guess what? Shitty people can come out of those schools too.
Yeah.
As the econ team has, was it Janet Yellen?
Mm-hmm.
As his nominee for Treasury Secretary, which would be the first woman for that.
Mm.
And also his senior White House press team is all female, which upset Fox News a great deal.
Mm.
Like, what, he couldn't find one man that was qualified for this? Like, that was kind of the point, to have all female.
Yeah, that's the idea.
It's like, if you wanted all men, just look at any point in the past few hundred years.
Mm-hmm. We've
had plenty of it.
Mm. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
Now, with that out of the way, we go on. We now have General Motors. They're dropping support of Trump in their suit over California's emission standards.
Yeah, that whole thing that they've been fighting pretty much from the start.
Yeah.
The Trump admin. Yeah, so they're switching sides in the legal fight against California's right to set its own clean air standards.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, finally? Basically now saying, we believe the ambitious electrification goals of the president-elect California and General Motors are aligned to address climate change by drastically reducing automobile emissions.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of just saying, like, all of the manufacturers are moving towards electric vehicles. Largely for what they're working on for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
Even the fucking new Hummer is electric.
Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the biggest examples of gas guzzlers as we've ever had.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And finally, Biden suffered a hairline fracture in his foot while playing with his dog Major. As you don't know, Major is a German Shepherd, and he's also a rescue dog.
Yeah.
Meaning he's going to be the first rescue dog to be the White House pet. Biden I guess, got a little too rough with it, and he ended up originally thought he'd sprained it, but no, it was hairline fractures.
Yeah, so be wearing a boot for the next few weeks.
Yeah. I mean, he's 80-something, so...
78, yeah, but...
78.
Just kind of a big departure from the way Trump handles his medical stuff.
Yeah.
Which is generally secretive, unless they can't hide it.
Yeah.
Because there's that whole trip last year to... what was it? The medical hospital near the White House.
Yeah, Walter Reed.
Yeah, where they've refused to ever acknowledge that he did go.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was for, so yeah. But hey.
Yeah.
Dogs are good for old people. Keeps them young.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now for some good news. Chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, Ajit Pai, will step down on January 20th, 2021.
He can take his fucking stupid Reese's Cup mug with him.
Yeah.
I look forward to see what the FCC is doing with Biden in control.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's some people that aren't stooges for the ISPs.
Mm-hmm.
It does make stupid fucking videos.
Yeah.
Mocking people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now, from there, we move on to some international news from India. So there has actually been some good news that's come out of India. I don't know if anybody, because the mainstream media sure as hell probably wouldn't have told you about it, but there was the largest general strike in human history happened in India this last week. 250 million people took part.
Yeah.
And if you look at the pictures, you'll notice that a lot of them are waving red flags with little hammers and sickles on them.
Yep.
That's going to scare a lot of people. Unfortunately, because of the shit that's gone down with the Modi regime and just the rise of Hindu nationalism in general, there was a complaint report filed in India against Netflix because they have a movie on there that features a kissing scene between a Hindu woman and a Muslim man.
Yeah. The movie's called A Suitable Boy.
Yeah.
Which, you know, makes sense they would be making stuff for India for their Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just kind of one of those things like, really? You guys are that sensitive to this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
I would bet there's probably been several Christmas movies, especially on, what is it? What's the stupid channel that does Christmas movies all month long?
Hallmark?
Yeah. They probably have dozens that are like, oh, a Christian girl and a Jewish boy
mm-hmm.
fall in love because they haven't seen each other in 25 years or whatever. All those stupid cookie-cutter storylines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Seems pretty silly, but I don't know what the... But I know this stuff is... goes a bit deeper than just people being silly.
Mm-hmm.
The tensions between Hindus and Muslims and all that in India.
Mm-hmm.
Not been doing great with Modi in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Just pushing that in the same ways that like things have been going here.
Mm-hmm.
Curious to see if anything actually happens.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then we got a couple of stories from Warner Brothers to round out this week. First, they have ended the free trial period ahead of the streaming launch of Wonder Woman 1984.
Yep. Which is not really a new thing. I think Disney did the same thing ahead of Hamilton's mm-hmm. launch on there. Netflix has done similar things when they have had big releases. But Netflix also tries a lot of different things with, like, aside with, like, free movies and episodes of their shows, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in place of this, they are doing a discounted offer, 22% discount for new subscribers who prepay for the first 6 months at $69.99, which is about $11.66 per month compared to the regular $15 per month. So a pretty decent deal for that. That's from December 3rd to the 15th of January, so...
Mm-hmm.
Got some time to figure out if you want to do that or not.
Yep.
Yeah, available to new and returning HBO Max subscribers. So anybody that isn't currently a subscriber, which, yeah, that could be a good deal to get on for this next story.
Yeah. So as you guys have probably figured out, the movie theater industry has all but died because of COVID-19. And the major studios have basically had trouble trying to figure out what they were going to do with all their movies that were supposed to come out in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
And Warner Brothers decided with, I mean, let's honestly, kind of what's probably the only rational decision, which is if you absolutely are forced to do a theatrical release of some kind, you can just put out both of them in theaters and on streaming the same day. So yeah. Warner Bros. Has decided that they're debuting their entire 2021 film slate both in theaters and HBO Max on day one.
Yep. That includes Dune, The Matrix 4, the new In the Heights movie, let's see, The Sopranos prequel, The Many Saints of Newark, Suicide Squad. Let's see, what else is here? The Little Things, the Denzel Washington movie. Biographical drama, Judas and the Black Messiah. Remake of Tom and Jerry, Godzilla vs. Kong. Oh, an adaptation of Mortal Kombat. I didn't know that was in the works.
Yep.
Angelina Jolie's Those Who Wish Me Dead. The Conjuring, The Devil Maybe Do It. Oh, the new Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Yep.
Reminiscence with Hugh Jackman, James Wan's Malignant, and the Will Smith sports drama King Richard.
Yep.
So quite a few things that I would assume if they were smart, they would have one of those releasing each month. Keep people subscribing. That'd be a pretty smart way to go instead of loading up any month with a couple of those. But they might have enough to even do that, to put a couple in a month. So. Who knows, but this is them taking a big step that nobody else has done just yet. Disney's kind of screwed around with it.
Yeah.
A bit with asking people to pay $30 for that Mulan live-action remake, which didn't do that well, from what I can tell.
No, it wasn't even that good.
And I think it's supposed to be on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Without requiring extra money as of today, I think it is. I think it was the 4th. So that might be up there right now. If you haven't seen it yet, you can check it out on your own.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to be curious to see how all the other studios start doing it, because not everybody has their own streaming service. So I imagine Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and all them will be bidding big to get, you know, entire studios worth of movies onto their service if the offer comes. Let's see. Yeah, the films that Warner Brothers plans to release in 2021 will be available to HBO Max subscribers for 31 days. After the 1 month mark, those movies only play in theaters until they reach the traditional home entertainment frame.
Yep.
From there, people can rent through online platforms like Amazon, iTunes, and Fandango.
Yep.
Unclear when they will return to HBO Max.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to see if there's any other restrictions here. But I think some of these also have like full 4K transfer, all that kind of stuff to it, but only on certain platforms. I think the new consoles won't support that. Or they're not supporting on the app on those platforms.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which ones it is on. Yeah, that's going to be weird. Here's their old 2021 domestic theatrical slate. Mortal Kombat's January 15th. I didn't even know that was that soon. I don't think I've seen a trailer for that either.
No.
And The Little Things is January 29th. Tom and Jerry, March 5th. Many Saints of Newark, March 12th. Reminiscence, April 16th. Godzilla vs. Kong, May 21st. The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, June 4th. In the Heights, June 18th. Space Jam, July 16th. Suicide Squad, August 6th. Dune, October 1st. Elvis, November 5th. King Richard, November 19th. Matrix 4, December 22nd. And the other ones don't have a date yet. So almost at once a month. I don't know why they wouldn't push some of these up or a little bit back. But yeah, it's interesting experiment to see how it goes, and I hope the theaters and the studios get to realize you can make money off of both the theater goers and the homebodies.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to appeal to one and hope that you can exploit them for as many tickets as possible.
Yeah.
Because guess what? There's a huge audience that doesn't want to go to theaters.
Yeah.
Especially in the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of people have good enough, set up at home. They just want to enjoy that, where they don't have to worry about kids or, sneaking in candy. They just
or any of that
eat
stuff.
Dinner and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Like normal people.
Yeah. Like normal people.
Instead of having to go to theaters that may sell dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one I usually go to kind of does that, but they also don't have tables or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You're just sitting in like a recliner.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a recipe for a huge mess.
Mm.
So,
all right. Okay. I do believe we got ourselves a show. So I would like to remind all of our listeners that if you have a question or comment or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it all, linked there for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of, any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, well, wait a little while. I mean, what else are you going to do? Go outside? Anyway, so with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Chris Sologi, I'd like to say good night, sleep tight. By the time I talk to you next week, I will have Cyberpunk 2077.
We'll have to get you to stop playing.
Yeah, you'll have to peel me off the floor. All right, good night, everybody.